The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We're always glad to have you. We're going to be talking about some serious issues. We're going to be talking about terrorism, talking about what's going on. We've seen a number of different situations going on with terrorist attacks, but it also seems to start impacting the United States. We've had this recent shooting in San Bernardino, California, and we've had a situation out there in terms of a possible terrorist attack right now that we're still trying to figure out. But we're going to be talking about this today, talking about Paris, talking about the State Department issuing travel warnings and talking about what people should do. I mean, whether you're a business, whether you're an individual, in terms of thinking about dealing with these different kind of threats and maybe even surviving these threats. We're talking to one of our favorite guests, Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. They're a private intelligence firm, a geopolitical intelligence firm that covers all these different issues, everything from the terrorist threats to already the other geopolitical threats, Russia and everything else. Please check out their website. They got a lot of good stuff on there. Fred, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Derek.
Hey, what's your thoughts right now, Fred, as we're seeing this thing going on in California, this 14 killed, a number of people wounded, two people who they're talking about possible ties to terrorism. At first, people were talking about a workplace violence situation. What's your take? What are you seeing?
Well, Derek, I think from a tradecraft and tactical methodology, it fits with past guidance we've seen displayed in Inspire magazine, which is the online jihadist al-Qaeda handbook that they utilize to help those in the field that want to act locally carry out some sort of attack. I don't know too many workplace violence incidents that are a husband-wife tandem team that show up in tactical gear with improvised explosive devices. So I think as this continues to play out that more and more it's going to look like an act of terrorism.
You know, I think the concerning thing for people, Fred, and we've talked about this before, this is this kind of almost the insider threat scenario that you've got somebody who was out of work, had been working there for several years, didn't seem to have any issues, or, you know, some people say he may have been upset one day or so, but, you know, still trying to validate that issue. But then all of a sudden, the dynamics change. I know it may not have been all of a sudden where his life was going on, but people, you know, either missed something, didn't see something, but something was going on with this guy.
Well, I think that's where it's fascinating when you look at the guidance in Inspire magazine. When you look at some of their suggestions, for example, in Qualities of an Urban Assassin, they talk about this, meaning blend in the workplace, don't call any attention to yourself, and then act. And then as this is still a very fluid situation, as you look at the number of improvised explosive devices that they had constructed, this tells me this is going to be different. And I think, again, that what's going to play out here is that we'll see some degree of terror nexus to this shooting.
You know, Fred, a lot of people have been wondering, can a person train themselves to do this kind of stuff, or has this person possibly, you know, gone and received? And I think they were talking about on his profile, he said he loved to shoot and stuff like that. Can a person get themselves, you know, in between reading and then maybe going to ranges and doing certain things, can a person, without going over to a training camp in overseas in Syria and other places, Afghanistan, can a person self-radicalize and get themselves to a point where they would start to be able to operate independently like this?
I think so. We've seen evidence of these kinds of events play out globally. And then when you look domestically here, I think one of the reasons why we had the malfunction with the improvised explosive devices in this case is that this team could not travel to a location like Afghanistan or Iraq, for example, and learn how to construct these devices. Mm. I'm still amazed, Derek, and thinking back on the Boston bombing, how they got those right. I've put together these kinds of devices in various training scenarios and certainly investigated a good number of them. And in order to get a bomb right, you have to practice. And I think what we saw unfold in San Bernardino is you had individuals that probably looked online through Inspire on how to put these together, but really did not have the ability or the time or the subject matter expertise to get them to work properly.
You know, as we look at it, and Fred, you just bring up a good point, because I'm sure during your time when you were working counterterrorism with State Department, you probably definitely looked at these kind of dynamics, the composition of a bomb. You know, the frightening thing about this is that, you know, there are other people out there who are probably looking at this attack like, you know, wow, this guy was a success. And if he only did this much more, then he would have been able to kill this many more people. What do you think in terms of where we need to be at right now? Because people were looking at this as like, this is a development disabilities organization, a social services organization. Nobody thought that, you know, they were thinking if anything gets hit as a restaurant, it's going to be maybe a hotel, possibly it's going to be something else. But now it seems like everything is on the table. Where should we be at in our mindsets, Fred?
Well, you're right. It is a mindset issue, and it's also a situational issue where we have to think about this in context of these kinds of attacks could be the new norm. What are we going to do as a nation to try to deal with these or ferret these kinds of individuals out from an intelligence perspective? But more importantly, this boils down to what are you going to do, your listeners? The individuals, are they prepared with the right mindset? So, God forbid, if one of these events starts to unfold in the workplace or a movie theater or in a school or a university, do you have a plan? Do you know what you're going to do? Do you know where the exits are? Are you going to run, hide, or fight? Have you thought about what your reaction is going to be? And in essence, this event was over in less than 5 minutes right inside the actual venue. So the cops can't get there in time to help you.
That's right, Fred. I think you hit it right on the nose in terms of kind of a mindset amongst organizations in terms of, you know, possibly the and everybody has kind of done the run hide. I mean, the run, hide and fight scenario. But it almost seems as if now organizations have to really, really kind of, you know, sit down and think about, you know, what do we do in terms of our training, in terms of our active shooting plan? But Fred, does it also come down in terms of actually looking at personnel and just kind of maybe reevaluating people? Is kind of human resources or somebody need to take another look at certain things in hiring?
I think when we look at this kind of case, and again, with some new information that I saw just surface today, that one or more of the suspects had been involved or in touch with some potential terrorist suspects overseas, that doesn't surprise me. As you and I both know in this business, that usually after the fact, you do find some degree of evidence to indicate that you had an individual that perhaps was predisposed or maybe was in contact with foreign agents or operatives that have come to the attention of a host government intelligence service. The question becomes one of, how do you find those nuggets ahead of time?
Right.
So we're back to the same issues, meaning you still need that human intelligence component and you still need that tactical analysis component to make sense of those kinds of dots and to try to connect them.
You know, Fred, has there ever been a study, and I was just wondering this the other day, has there ever been anything that, and even in your experience when you were working on these issues at State Department and at Stratfor, has anyone ever looked at, you know, the mindset that someone has to go into and then even maybe the behavior or the look of a person right when they, you know, get ready to do something? Is there a certain look? Is there a certain kind of, are you kind of, some people were saying in Paris, people were kind of in a zombie mode, almost in a trance, you know, when they're doing these kind of things. Is it a kind of a drug state, or is it kind of a very, very adrenaline driven state? Has anyone ever looked at that to kind of maybe somebody could see something behavioral, even if it's right before somebody draws something out to maybe stop something?
I've seen quite a few academic papers on this topic. I think one of the challenges are most of these individuals are killed or blow themselves up in some sort of attack. So
right.
Unlike the, for example, the U.S. Secret Service major case study looking at the profile of an assassin, where you might have an individual that you can talk to that's been captured and is at St. Elizabeth's Hospital and you can debrief and go through the process with them, it's tough to do when these individuals are being killed or dying in the jihad. So I think you raise some interesting points. I think that we need academic institutions, organizations like the FBI and DHS to study this. I know the NYPD radicalization study is it's a few years old now, but it's still quite good, and I would encourage your listeners, if they're interested in this topic, to take a look at that.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. It's a geopolitical intelligence firm that covers all of these issues, everything from what's going on with terrorism to all the different risks and threats that are going on around the world, taking a moment to analyze them and put some perspective to them and also provide some insight to their clients who are government, private sector, and nonprofit. We'll be right back after this break. We're talking about what's going on in terms of terrorism, domestic terrorism, international terrorism, what's happened in California, what's happened in Paris, what's happened in Mali and all the other areas. What should we be concerned about right now as, you know, as we go into the next year? Are things are ramping up? Do we need to take a new state on this? Is there a way in which law enforcement and military can deal with these situations? Where we will be keep on talking about this when we come back. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about terrorism and talking about what's going on, both going on in California, as you know, the situations that's happened in Colorado, Paris, Mali. We could go on and on. There has been a lot of situations that are going on, and some people can classify it as possible domestic terrorism, international terrorism, people influenced by a number, whether it be extremist viewpoints or by ISIS or Al-Qaeda or whatever the case is. But what's happening is that we are trying to talk about this and hopefully can maybe either figure out some kind of solutions on how to deal with this. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at Stratfor.com. Private intelligence, geopolitical intelligence firm focus on all of these issues around the world, whether it be terrorism or whether it be just geopolitical issues around the world. Fred, when, you know, as we look at this kind of dynamic, and me and you have had many conversations about kind of the law enforcement officer, it seems to me that the law enforcement officer, that patrol officer, that guy on the beat, is going to need some new training or some new exposure to this possible threat, because they're the ones who are in the neighborhoods. They're the ones who are talking to, you know, different people in the apartment buildings or the communities. And maybe somebody could tell them, hey, I saw such and such, bring this in. What's your thoughts on that, Fred?
I think you raise a very good point. I think there's two aspects to that where we've made some strides from a DHS perspective, but we still have a long way to go. In essence, you're dealing with community engagement time. That's that time that that street cop can get out of the car, talk to people, talk to businessmen, engage kids on a street corner, or just interact with the community. And when you're running from 911 call to 911 call, there's not a lot of opportunities or time to be able to do that. I think the other aspect, Derek, that comes into play with this is there still is a disconnect between what the U.S. government may have, such as the FBI, the kind of intelligence information they may be working on a terrorism case, and what's shared to that beat cop in that patrol car. And I think that that's where that disconnect exists. I'm not so sure it's a fixable problem. I was somewhat optimistic after 9/11 we would get there, but that still seems to be broken. I think that terrorism threat information is so watered down by the time it hits that street cop walking a beat that it's practically not useful.
A lot of that stuff, and Fred, we've talked about this many times, a lot of the stuff may come out, whether it be a bolo where it comes out in kind of maybe an unclassified report that kind of tells you the same things about kind of how to watch for suspicious activity or things like that, but it really doesn't give you any leads to follow. Is it still, Fred, the dynamic of the silos? I mean, that people want to protect their silos in this game, whether it be the Bureau or Homeland Security or things like that, and we're still on reactive mode rather than being proactive mode, because it's the human intelligence is really down at that beat cop level. Most times the federal agencies are secondary in their response.
Well, I think so. I think when you look at this from a street perspective, there still is that disconnect between what the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force might be working and what is actually shared with a state fusion center or a city intelligence department. On the flip side, there's some positives. Let's be frank here. You've had a tremendous number of cops that have received secret and top secret clearances that are now fully integrated in all of these task forces. So it really, at times, the onus is upon them to bring information back to their departments. I think the FBI has done a much better job today than back when I was an agent, and just with the sharing of information across the spectrum. But there still, I think, are some firewalls there that cause that information not to flow. And then you look at it, too, from a practical perspective, and we all watched the San Bernardino event unfold, and it was the cops, the beat cops, dealing with the problem. They're the ones chasing that SUV down the highway. They're the ones shooting at it. They're the ones taking the incoming rounds. And granted, the feds may have been responding and may have been there in a backup and support capacity, but at the end of the day, it's the men and women in uniforms. And I think there's another aspect of this that I haven't heard a lot of people talk about is if you look at the public safety responsibility here with fire and EMS and the health system, we've gotten pretty darn good here as a nation in dealing with this, and EMS and dealing with mass casualties, and it's just because we've gotten a tremendous amount of experience in working with this problem now.
And hopefully, we can as we go into the next year and go beyond these things, we're hoping taking these lessons learned and start to evolve this thing. But I think what you were saying in terms of community engagement and everything else is right on point, Fred. As you deal with a lot of different businesses. I mean, are you hearing a lot of businesses, really, really kind of expressing the concerns of, what's next? We saw the Planned Parenthood situation. They had a good security system that allowed them to isolate where this guy was at and, maybe even kind of pinpoint him and resolve that situation really, really quickly. Are you hearing a number of kind of the private sector companies and maybe nonprofits really kind of expressing more concern and thinking about security more and more and more?
We are. We're seeing general angst or consensus within the multinational corporations and some of our clients on trying to renew or relook at some of their active shooter emergency action plans, contingency plans, trying to keep track of workforce as they travel. Paris was an example. Our phones were ringing off the hook during that event because you had a lot of international companies and travelers. And then, of course, you had the lockdown in Belgium. And quite frankly, Derek, I've never seen a country lock down a city like Brussels was locked down in 30 years in this business. So that's the kind of paradigm shift that I think we're seeing. And what happens is, let's face it, we've rolled from Paris to the lockdown to Brussels. Now we've shifted to the Planned Parenthood shooting and into San Bernardino. So it's very easy to forget all these previous attacks that were just days ago.
Right. It's happened so rapidly. And Fred, as you guys are looking at it, Is there a possible concern that there's some kind of calculations that, you know, there are so many different kind of sales that couldn't be tracked, that there, you know, there are different people out there that, you know, they could be, there could be implanted people, and it's on all sides, whether people are extremists like the Planned Parenthood situation, or, you know, this situation in California or Paris or whatever the case is, but you have all these kind of different independent sales where you really do have a hard time kind of surveilling people, or these people weren't on the radar. They had a clean record, or, you know, whatever the case is. But then all of a sudden they really, really kind of ramp up. Is there something going on that people are maybe, saying, well, I want to go ahead and do my thing now? Or are we seeing something that's kind of driving this?
We could be seeing exactly what Inspire has tried to do, meaning pushing this propaganda and manuals out on how to carry out attacks and make bombs, how to fly under the radar, how to go about without being picked up by the counterterrorism officials. And that's what I think is going to be fascinating as we watch this current attack in California unfold, because if that's the case, Derek, this is going to be a problem for U.S. counterterrorism officials, because how do you identify these kinds of people beforehand when they're not on the radar? It takes this kind of incident to be able to connect those dots that might be so loose that they're 2-3 steps away. So this is why this kind of case study is going to be fascinating as the dust settles here.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find them at stratfor.com. We're talking about this terrorism situation, both looking at the domestic scenario that's going on, California, Colorado, a number of different things that's going on, but also looking at the international spectrum, Paris, Mali, Lebanon, other areas. What are we in store for as we go into 2016? What do we need to be concerned about? We're looking at that today. You can find them at stratfor.com. Great site to get some insight on. We're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about terrorism. We have been talking about what's going on internationally and domestic. We're talking about the number of different attacks that have happened. We've almost had several attacks almost in succession, just one after another, and people are becoming very, very concerned. And it's not a 9/11 type attack. It's more personal. Storefronts being hit, Planned Parenthood being hit, social services agencies being hit, hotels being hit. If you look at it, it becomes a scary scenario in terms of how do we deal with these things. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's a Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. But Fred also has experience working for State Department. He used to run the counterterrorism dynamics for State Department for diplomatic security. Fred, when you look at this piece and you know, State Department, where you used to work at, hit that travel warning. They travel warnings for Mali, travel warnings for parts of Europe and other areas like that. You know, when State Department rises up that travel warning scenario, what are they saying to American individuals and businesses? What are they trying to tell them?
What they're trying to do is to raise those international travelers from the United States predominantly as to their situational awareness, meaning most people don't realize that behind the scenes that update that's sent out by the State Department is a community problem, meaning the intelligence community gets together, they work up a rough draft, they send it around to each other at the CIA and the DOD and the State Department and the Pentagon and the FBI. And everybody gets on board and works on it as a comprehensive product. But more importantly, there's decisions made based on tripwires behind the scenes. And as you look at these global attacks that were leading up to that advisory, whether it be the hotel attacks in Africa, we also had a horrible case in Israel with the stabbing of a American student there, by a Palestinian. So you have so many acts of violence that it reaches a threshold that the State Department feels compelled, and the intelligence community feels compelled, that they need to raise everybody's awareness. And it doesn't mean that you need to hunker down and be afraid to go outside your doors, but it's a reminder of the violence in the world, and that individuals should be aware at all times of their surroundings and think about what you're going to do in the event of a problem.
You know, Fredo, are we still, you know, we with all the shootings and everything else, you just kind of brought up something else about stabbings. Are we seeing other things happening? Are we seeing kidnappings? Are we seeing, you know, other things that may not get the news, but it's happening out there, maybe to American or other, you know, citizens of other maybe Western or other countries? Are we seeing also maybe an uptick in those areas that people should also be concerned about overseas?
I think what we've seen is the tempo of these attacks at on your soft targets, such as hotels, and what we saw unfold in Paris with cafes and so forth, and the effort to get inside the soccer stadium. So these are the kinds of venues that resonate or should resonate with each one of us, because these are the kinds of places that you and I go, friends and family or loved ones travel to. You got the holidays upon us, where you're going to have a tremendous amount of Americans and Europeans vacationing in places like Paris and London and so forth. And when you think about what Brussels just went through, and in many ways is still living through the lockdown of their city, what the State Department is trying to remind Americans that travel is that, look, this is a dangerous world. Pay attention to where you're going. Do your research. Know how to get in touch with the U.S. Embassy. Register so you can be on their local alerts, so if problems start to arise, you can get notified in a timely manner that of the problems and areas to avoid.
You know, Fred, a lot of people have wondered, and I know maybe you guys may even assist in that or advise in that. There, you can do the stuff with State Department, but there are also these kind of private services that can maybe help get you out of a situation, or kind of maybe help track you where you are, or maybe help, you know, provide, you know, some security services. How valuable do you think that is when a person is thinking about, I know State Department has OSAC and they've got the RSOs and the different embassies, the regional security officers. How valuable do you think that a person should think about, you know, in terms of their security, should they get that additional layer? I mean, of course, they maybe not be able to carry weapons overseas or things like that, but can they get that additional layer through private entities?
They certainly can. We try to provide our subscribers with information on our website on events that unfold and try to make sense of the world. There's also some wonderful vendors that we're not associated with but do very good work, such as iJet, for example. There's another one called Global Rescue that provides medical assistance to travelers when they're overseas. And, of course, the U.S. Embassy will always help. It's been my experience, though, in dealing with the State Department, having worked there, if you get a major event unfold, it's very, very difficult at times to get help quickly. So it's always good to have your own plan. Think in context, Derek, of you have to take ownership of your own safety and security. And it's great if that American embassy can help you, but what happens if that embassy is not in a position to help you, such as what we saw unfold in a Benghazi kind of scenario?
Right.
So where are you going to turn to then? So it's always good to have a backup plan and a contingency plan to get information and know how you're going to get yourself out of a country if need be.
And there are many, many countries, I mean, like you just mentioned Benghazi, but even if you think about maybe a Mali situation or whatever, there are many kind of, you know, countries that are just on the cusp of almost instability. There's a thin line between stability and instability. And like you said, that American embassy, like a Kenya scenario, could be under attack. But then, you know, also then you can't get in touch with them because they're dealing with their own crisis. They can't help people out there who are American citizens out there on their own. You know, how much should a person rely on getting to know the police services? I mean, have you found that a lot of time the police services are helpful? Or do you really have to understand the country you're going to figure out, are they corrupt? Are they going to be helpful? You know, do you need to do your homework in advance?
Absolutely. You should do a good job of your own due diligence on any country that you're traveling to, so you know exactly what you should or shouldn't do, what you can bring into that country, and the State Department website has outstanding information on that before you go. But then you also got to think about in context of, let's say there is some sort of Paris kind of event, and I guarantee you in those kinds of events, the last thing the cops are thinking about are trying to help you. They're trying to deal with the bad guys and the unfolding scenario. So what is going to be your plan then? Or let's say you can't get to that U.S. embassy, or that U.S. embassy has been incapacitated to a point that it can't help you. So then what are you going to do? That's why it's good to have some of these backup services, in my assessment, to help you. And I can tell you this, just I've dealt with this my entire career. When you can't find loved ones, when you have these kinds of events unfold, there's a psychological aspect in there that is extraordinarily difficult to deal with. So think about communication plans, think about alternative communication plans, and think about having help or knowing what you can do to get help.
You know, you just mentioned something in terms of, and I know Facebook and other places were kind of trying to do that, kind of the locator type pieces. But in terms of, you know, should people really be thinking about that? What are my locator type services? And that may even just go for any scenarios that we saw in California or Planned Parenthood. Like you just said, Fred, I mean, taking ownership of your own security, people are probably going to have to really kind of change their mindset right now, huh?
Absolutely. We saw a good push after 9/11 with the trade towers collapse and with emergency action plans, and cities like New York are wonderfully prepared, and D.C. is not in bad shape from an emergency prep perspective, but again, it's a proximity issue. The farther and farther you get away from the East Coast, in my assessment, the less and less cities are prepared. Now, we saw this unfold on the West Coast. So we'll see as to, you know, what kind of reminder this is of everybody that's engaged and going about their workday. But if you think in context of all the different kinds of sites that have just been hit by active shooters in our nation alone, this is the kind of example of why individuals need to start thinking about what is it that I'm going to do to ensure that I'm going to take care of myself and my family and my loved ones to make sure that we're safe and sound.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He's Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. They provide a number of different services that you can subscribe to. There's some things on there that you can take a look at right now just for free, different reports and everything else, but a great array of services and information and things that will really, really provide you some insight on a number of different issues, whether it be terrorism, whether it be stuff that's going on in Russia, in Africa, all over the world. They have an insight on it. We're going to be right back. We're going to keep on talking about terrorism when we get back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about terrorism. We have been talking about what's going on in the country, what's going on in the world. ISIS, Al-Qaeda, we're talking about extremists. We're talking about the influences that's happening in terms of different situations that's been going on that we've seen now here, maybe how to deal with it. We've talked about how to maybe take personal account of your own security and safety, that you cannot always wait for someone else to really be there. You need to think about what you're going to do in any kind of emergency situation. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. They look at a number of different issues around the world. Fred also spent time at State Department running their counterterrorism situation, diplomatic security. He understands this business very, very well. Fred, you know, as we're looking at this kind of situation and in terms of kind of radicalization and other things like that, it almost gets to be that, you know, we're not seeing any kind of, you know, we're seeing kind of indicators, but we're not seeing one type of profile. Used to be a time that they talked about, well, there were people who came out of poverty and you know, they didn't have a good home or they weren't in good jobs. But now we're seeing people who are employed, bus drivers. We're seeing cafe owners. We're seeing it just seemed to be a game changer that you can't get one particular, you know, snapshot, a profile on any kind of terrorism or extremists.
Well, I think what you're seeing too, Derek, is the death by a thousand cuts, so to speak, where there's so many different variables here that it's very difficult to just pigeonhole certain kinds of profiles to help you identify those that are predisposed towards this kind of activity. And I think in some cases, if you look at this from a historical perspective, we've never really been that good at it anyway. I was thinking about this overnight. You go back and you start looking for groups like, from a historical perspective, of Hezbollah and Black September, and then some of the other leftist groups from Europe, such as the Italian Red Brigades and the Red Army Faction. Those were small groups of people. Like the November 17 org, that was very insular and they were very suspicious, and their success was their close-knit kind of commando cell capability. But then when you look at what we're faced with today, you've got this component where it's not per se a sleeper kind of mindset, because that's a whole different kind of kettle of fish, but it's trying to reach those persons via social media or magazines such as Inspire to encourage them to, in essence, fly under the radar and act locally. And that, to me, is going to be the big intelligence problem or that huge intelligence gap going forward. How are we going to identify the future tandem couples just like we saw unfold in San Bernardino?
You know, with that, Fred, as we think about that kind of piece, like you mentioned, the death of a thousand cuts, and, you know, how do we identify? And Fred, is that a new dynamic as you look back in history? I mean, kind of even taking back to IRA and all the other different organizations, did we see that relationship dynamic where a couple was involved in terms of the fight for, you know, that, you know, they would fight together or they would, you know, work to die together? Is that a new piece or is that something that's old?
We've seen that kind of dynamic in other organizations, modern day and some of the old school groups as well. You go back to some of the more violent terrorists inside of groups like the Bader-Meinhof faction were female. They were integrated members and were trained killers. So that's not a new phenomena. What I think that the ease and the operations in those days, Derek, were that you knew you had a fixed number. And yes, you might have had some outriders that were part of their logistic or support network. But in reality, I think when you're looking at potentially hundreds in the United States and potentially thousands in a place like Europe, I'm not so sure the counterterrorism bandwidth is at that point that we can prevent these kinds of isolated attacks from occurring.
Wow. You know, I was just recently watching something, and it was talking about how terrorism, especially during the 70s, rose up, and we saw, you know, a lot of some of the same thing we're seeing today back in Europe with IRA and the bombings and all the other kind of killings. Is there anything to learn from history, Fred, in terms of how those organizations either were defeated or stopped that we can maybe apply, or are we basically at a new level, like you said? I mean, where we're dealing not only with hundreds, but we're dealing with, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands. Do we throw the old playbook out and have to kind of start all over again?
I think, Derek, it's going to boil down to something that you and I have talked about a lot. You're still going to need human intelligence. You're going to need sources to point you in the right direction to so law enforcement and the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces know how to focus their investigations in. And I think it's also going to take, the wonderful technology advancements that we've had since the days of old when we were writing names on 3x5 index cards, that we've come a long way with that. And with the U.S. owning the cyberspace, I think the issue is going to boil down to is, you know, how do you find that nugget out of everything that you're collecting all the time? Where are you going to find that nugget that's going to point you towards that person to kind of help you? And then you can try to work an undercover or try to get a source close to that individual that's going to be able to tell you that, you know, hey, I think this person's up to no good. It looks like they might be making bombs or they're talking about some sort of activity. So I think it's a basic investigative and intelligence problem.
You know, Fred, as we look at this, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder what needs to be expanded. Is it the state, local resources in terms of kind of police and maybe, you know, on the ground intelligence in terms of, you know, human teams from, you know, maybe just local police services or whatever the case is, people who can infiltrate undercover or whatever the case is. Is it more federal resources that we need, or is there a need in terms of the private sector to get more involved or just people to get more involved in a different kind of way beyond kind of see something, say something? You know, where do we go with this, Fred? I mean, because it seems as if you mentioned the right bandwidth. Do we have the right bandwidth, and does this need to be increased in a certain area?
I think that the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces have all the tools needed to be able to thwart these kinds of plots, provided they have the intelligence to indicate that person X is planning some sort of issue. So I think they exist, Derek. I think it's going to take better intelligence on sources to help you understand who might be in the community planning these kinds of attacks. It doesn't necessarily have to be of the jihadist variant, too. It's white hate, it's Aryan Nation, it's neo-Nazi, it's across the spectrum. And I think that at the end of the day, it always has been my experience that it boils down to a failure point of a lack of human intelligence.
You know, with all of that, and that's, we're talking about one of the riskiest things right there. Do you think that we have enough resources or enough emphasis on human intelligence, Fred?
I think that that's where it gets back to a little bit of that breakdown with the beat cops and the community engagement, meaning do you have enough time to get out of your patrol car, to visit with people that may be distrustful of law enforcement to begin with? Do you have the right demographics on your police force that can go into some of these communities and be fully accepted, be trusted? And if you look, Derek, let's be real here. When you look across the country, there's a lot of animosity and a lot of police haters out there.
Right.
As a nation. So there's a lot of challenge in some communities. And the last thing you're going to get in some places is volunteers coming forward to try to help the cops do anything.
You know, this is really a unique time, just like you mentioned, Fred, that, you know, the police dynamic and maybe the distrust, you know, for police is probably at an all-time high. But then the level that we need that in community engagement is probably the most critical that we've ever needed it in any time in life.
I think so. And that gets back to, are there enough cops on the streets that aren't just rolling from 911 call to the next call? And it's been my experience, if you talk to the street cops around the nation, they'll tell you that they don't have a lot of time to get out of the cars to do anything.
Right. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's Vice President of Intelligence at Strat4. You can find him at Strat4.com. geopolitical intelligence firm that covers all of these different issues, everything from terrorism to what's going on in Europe and Eurasia, what's going on in Asia, what's going on around the world, covering all the different issues that you need to know about. Great site, great services that they have. He also spent time in Department of State working counterterrorism with diplomatic security. Fred, always thank you for your insight. And if we don't talk before the holidays, we're going to have to definitely catch up in 2016 and get your insight. Hopefully and prayerfully, it won't be more of these incidents going on. But, you know, we definitely have to make sure that people understand that they got to work to maintain their own safety.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.